Hello and welcome to Broadcast Focus, the channel where we talk to the people behind the media, entertainment and broadcast industry. My name is Russell Trafford-Jones and thanks for joining me. Previously, I spoke to Romain Boucaud, CEO and founder of MotionSpell, about the open source project GPAC. We explored what it is from a technical perspective, and I'll leave a link to that conversation in the description. Today, we're going to look at GPAC again, but from a point of view of what can it do for me. And I'm really pleased that Romain has agreed to come back. Hi, Romain. Thanks for joining me again.
Hey, Russell. Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined, I'm pleased to say, by Alan McLennan, founder and CEO of Padam Media.
Good morning from California, Russell. Nice to be on with you.
Well, you're both joining me from America, Romain via satellite link. So we'll see how that goes. Is that Starlink?
Yeah, that's Starlink, yes.
What we're going to do is we're going to look at and just chat really about GPAC, because what I feel strongly about is that I used GPAC before I knew you guys while I was teaching, and it feels to me like it's this kind of cool little black box of software which can go in all sorts of places and do all sorts of things. And if you challenge people and you say, you know, what is it that's underneath whatever software platform, they might say, oh, FFmpeg, if they know anything about stuff like that. And if you challenge them again and say, no, think of something else, they might say VLC. But, you know, I'd like to think that people will start associating, you know, GPAC with one of those things that you're quite likely to find under the hood of something, particularly something that's streaming. So that's one reason why, you know, I wanted to have this conversation again. Also, I wanted to look at really what it means, though. You know, why are people going to use GPAC as a tool, and who has used it, and, you know, what are the reasons? So it's brilliant to have both of you to talk to about this. I think as we need a small amount of an intro, even though we have talked about it before. GPAC's an open source project which has been going for, I believe, 20 years. So I guess there's two questions. First of all, Oman, can you give us an idea of what it is, you know, and the types of tools and the things it can do, but also explain kind of why we're 20 years on, what was it trying to fix to start with, or help do to start with, and where have we come to?
Yeah, sure. So GPAC is an open source project, but that's a project that I started 25 years ago as a startup in New York City. And that was at the era where, you know, that was the beginning of interactivity, I would say. That was the beginning of the web. There was Macromedia Flash at the time that emerged as a technology. And a group of people at MPEG said, you know what? We should make a set of standards that would, you know, make it available as free standards with, you know, I wouldn't say free implementation, but implementation based on these free standards so that we have competition around this set of technology. This is how GPAC started as a startup. And the founder, the creator of GPAC, Jean Lefebvre, who's still around as a researcher now, decided to join a research entity, and they decided to open source it and use these, you know, GNU licenses that we use for open source, just because of IP problems that they used to have. And so GPAC started as something that was really, really wide in terms of coverage, including 2D, 3D video. So that's authoring, you know, packaging, encoding, streaming, receiving, some playback, also some inspection of contents. And we did it that way because when you start on the new technology, you need to control it end to end. If you're packaging some content in a new format, you need a player for this. You need to check that what you're doing is correct. And so GPAC, with this R&D route, just went into that direction. And I can't answer the second part of your question completely. I don't know. I don't have the complete answer. But I think it's too many people. We've been disseminating for more than 20 years, 20 years being open source with a wide audience. And I think a lot of the people using GPAC initially because they wanted to get the videos out of their cameras, or they wanted to watch it on something where it wasn't planned, and they tried to do this, they just had their own career, and at some point they were decision makers. And they said, hey, I used to use that. It worked. Why can't I use it now?
If I may be able to jump in on that to complement what Roman just said, I'd like to start the story a little bit earlier. Back in the day when you brought up Macromedia Flash, back in that period of time, I was a part of that entire community too. And the efficiencies of distribution to content to audiences was really key. Nobody really knew what's going on. Now let's step back here a little bit. That's back when, you know, the connection of, you know, networks into the home where the audiences are starting to emerge was becoming recognized, not realized, but recognized. You know, I patented something called a bandwidth manager in the mid 80s, you know, and then in going into the 90s, when we're talking about this, was the growth of, you know, a product that I was fortunate enough to have Steven Spielberg a part of, which was called Worlds, Inc. And Worlds, Inc. was 3D multi-user virtual web worlds on the internet, which meant avatars walking around with the likes of, you know, rock star Sting, you know, having worlds. All of that was putting such strain on the networks. It was a huge discussion on how to make things work efficiently. But let's also remember that period of time. That period of time was a gold rush. You know, Macromedia was doing things. It was an ownership of that kind of technology and capability to be able to grab the audiences as much as they could, because they saw that this was in perhaps, you know, new theaters or new television networks. It was all this kind of back and forth. So there was the business component out there to own, and then there was the technical brilliance of the artists that were trying to create an open source. And, you know, and that was what we're starting from in this discussion. Pata Media Group is Peer Advanced Digital Entertainment and Media. Okay, and I started that about 20 years ago too. And in the course of that, we're looking and participating in these kinds of distribution of content and connections. There's many aspects within these kinds of efforts that come into play. And many of those is not just technical, it's also individuals and how they want to own this kind of effort. JPAC started out as a general discussion of how do we solve this problem more than it was how do we own this problem, you know, and that is what, you know, I wanted to give a little context of how it kind of all got to that, because let's not forget, when Roma started getting involved with this, this is when the world that we know of today was just starting. So in that process, this has had to be migrated through many different iterations to get to this point that we're talking about right now.
Absolutely agree. I think I agree with one thing that you stressed out, which is that this is the work on some of some individuals. And when you look at the story of JPAC, this is exactly what happened. When Jean created JPAC, he had this vision in mind, and I think it gave him an incredible energy to drive the project. Even when the MPEG-4 set of standards was completely superseded by, you know, Micromedia Flash and HTML5, so it didn't succeed. People didn't use it. It's not a commercial success, but he continued to invest into the level of knowledge that he had. MPEG evolved, you know, clearly making contributions, also linked contributions, you know, to the other standards and platforms. And of course, the contributions of these individuals and all the work that had been through and all the experience that was gathered was extremely helpful to build what we have today.
Yeah. I'm just going to share the actual website, because what you can do, and we showed this briefly last time, is for anyone who's interested, you can actually go to gpack.io and also even try it out in the browser, because there's a WebAssembly version of it. So feel free, please check it out there.
I think I've got a quick question, Russell, before we interrupt. GPAC, Roma, do you want to explain what GPAC stands for?
Yeah, it's a recursive acronym. So the G stands for GPAC. So the GPAC project on advanced content. It's a really geeky stuff, right? That was popular, I think, 25 years ago.
Yeah, this is fantastic. This is the genesis of the overall idea. Is exactly that. Two different ways of approaching solving this problem. And that's the brilliance of what this has created. Let's remember also back at the time when, you know, net neutrality was coming in and, you know, keeping the net open and everything was to be free, you know, and how that is. And then the business got involved and, you know, how do you own it? And so this is what this effort has, and it's worked hard to get to this today with a level of sophistication that is available within MotionSmell, even for how this is solved. Because the capabilities of being able to reach across and bridge gaps within the understanding as much as the technical superiority of what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a clash of cultures. People don't get it because, you know, most of the time I'm discussing with people who are employees at companies in the streaming media industry. But when you look at the topology of the users of GPAC, you have people who are, in my opinion, mostly creative. You know, it's not top managers of company that comes to this gpac.io website and wants to use GPAC. It's mostly individuals who have a problem and they saw these creative projects and they want to do something with it that has nothing to do. And on my side, on the professional, you know, services side at MotionSmell, people sometimes don't understand. They come to the documentation and they say, are there so many pages on creative stuff and how to do things I don't care about compared to, you know, what I would call competitors, like other open source projects, for example, created by companies. And I say to them, it's just these other projects just focus on your use case. But when it comes to GPAC, it's so much wider. We just open the doors, and it's great to have you, Alan, and because you seem to know so much about the history of what happened. What is great for us is that there are cycles. And so things are, I know what you're talking about. But things are in cycles, you know, they come back from time to time. And really recently, I think we got this mention in our last interview, Russell, when the Apple Vision Pro came, Apple decided to use the multi-view HEVC extensions. And that had been implemented in GPAC 8 or 9 years ago. And people were really surprised. They were like, what? I can take an open source project, not even updated, and I can deal with these videos. That's magic. It's not really magic. That's the way that, you know, innovation works. You have ideas. Mm-hmm. There is a market. And basically, innovation is when the new ideas meet the market.
I think what strikes me about, and we'll dig in a couple of moments into some of the use cases, or case studies, I should say. But what strikes me is a lot of what we can do with GPAC, it's not about the functionality itself. It ends up being a workflow which is improved or created or simplified through it. And I think it seems to stand out a little bit. It's not just a, you know, a single binary. You download it and encode some stuff and everybody's happy. You know, this is it's a way of creating workflows, which, of course, is the name of the game when it comes to media.
Yeah, so maybe I can give some history about it. So GPAC usually used to be a single command line applications that you would execute. You would have your data in. We would basically multiplex it. So you take many media and we put it into something that looked like, you know, a Flash experience, let's say, or something that you could have executed on a modern browser that didn't exist at the time. So that's how it used to work. And when we started to try to seek for partnerships with other projects, including FFmpeg, we got difficulties. Like they were, again, even among open source projects and, you know, that would seem quite similar for some people from the industry, actually we had differences and it was not possible to converge. And that's where we built this kind of platform where we allow people to have their own graph of processing that would leverage other projects as well. And it just opened, I don't know how to say that, but I have many graphs that shows the progression of the project over time that just exploded all our metrics, because suddenly GPAC was not an obscure tool that you would execute from a command line. It became something that was foundational into, you know, some streaming media workflows or some art performances or some, I don't know, you know, when you were doing your own, you know, geeky media server at home or when trying to, you know, having a conversion workflow for your phone, it became just huge for us. Like even medical appliances, there are so many ways to use multimedia and I'm so happy that people, you know, mm-hmm. use it that way and not only like 2D traditional television.
Yeah, let me give you another example then the evolution of what this kind of thought process is talking about right now. We have this thing happening right at the moment called AI. You know, and AI is like, you can take it in whatever you consider. It is a very cool need in societal engagement and it will prosper tremendously. Why NVIDIA's chips are so valuable, why AMD's new chips are just really rocketing, not reflected in the market, but they are a phenomenal technology. The need of the overall compute power to be able to pacify this is off the charts, and it will be measured. So I can say off the charts right now, but it will be measured in some capacity, if not already, that I don't know about. But the fact of it is this is where the efficiencies of the GPAC notion and vision come into play, is making that much more capable. The hardware can do one thing, but there's a critical need in the bridge. You're only, as the old saying goes, you're only as fast as the weakest part of any kind of link. This is that and where we're at right at the moment. So we're at another evolutionary change. And I'm just going to throw a parallel here, Russell, from not really discussing it about before, but Wilma brought this up and sparked a thought back in the day. We're at that point back when this was first conceived and started to be understood. And now we're even in a more critical phase of trying to figure out how we're going to pacify the need. I mean, there's going to be stumbling blocks in there. There's going to be misnomers. I was just, you know, chairing a keynote this week in San Francisco called AI Realized. And we had myself and, you know, senior executives from NBCU came down for me and, you know, Paramount and Tubi. And we talked about supply chain. And what was the most gating part of this efficiencies of the supply chain? The fluidity of the content being exchanged. And we're talking now about massive amounts of content, movies, television shows, getting to you and I to watch. And I want to kind of bring up one thing, just, and then we'll jump into the rest of the discussion. But you said something really interesting that brought a smile on my face. And, you know, when you said, and people will be working on something and then they're happy. Point of clarification, in our world, Romans and my world is, they're never happy. They're pacified, you know, and they're pacified for a solution at that moment. But to this point that Roland was saying, you know, it just launches another stream of refinement that makes things better. And that, again, we're going to get back to why this took place over this period of time and why it's so critically needed today. And that's what the white paper really drills into. If you haven't read the white paper, those of you who are listening to this show, you're in for a treat. Now, know that it's 45 pages long and it's a lot of technical discussion in it, but it's pretty impactful. If you want to be schooled on why and how things work, you know, it's pretty impactful. I had nothing to do with it. I'm just one of those people that read it and went, whoa, I got to set this down, digest it, come back to it. But it's you go to school on this document. And this is why it's really key to start getting an understanding of how do you connect to audiences and how do you bring this content through.
Yeah, so if you want to have a look at the white paper for yourself, it's easy enough to find on the Motion Spell website, but there's a link on the screen and also in the description. And we're going to use it really just as a launch pad for a few conversations. And I think that when it comes to any type of technology, we know, well, we get told over and over again what it can do. So cloud is a good example. We're always being told there's flexibility, scalability, blah, blah, blah. That's great. And not, I'm not saying that's not true. But the thing is, it's only when you actually try something for yourself that A, you find out whether it is true. And also, if there's a whole like suite of benefits, like there is in cloud, you find out which of those are true for you and your organization, because for your organization, some of the others may not be relevant. And what I like about this is that there are some kind of case studies where we're showing actually what has been achieved and not what could be achieved. So I think that's really good. So I'm just going to jump in and have a quick look through this, because this has been put together by Fred Dawson. Are you able to speak perhaps about Fred, just to give some info about who's put this together? Because it is a very well researched and sourced and referenced document.
Well, I can. Let's just take a look at this author and who he is and what he is. Fred Dawson is, you've got a lot of brilliance on this call, Russell, you know, with Roma, and now you bring up Fred. So let me just be a person that can help connect some of the dots a little. Fred Dawson, there he is. There's one thing about his capabilities and understanding as a journalist and depth of capabilities when it comes to peeling back the onion on technology. But let's not forget his basis. He is a minor league pitcher in baseball in America back in the day. He is continuing to be on stage as a guitarist and vocalist with bands in and around the world, being it's whether rock or, hip hop, believe it or not. You know, this fellow has a depth of capabilities. And what I just described is the way the mind works. He's a mathematically centric individual, and the mind works in that capacity. There's different types of minds, right? And I'm not going to go into it. Mathematicians have a tendency to have this creative outlet and capability. And Fred Dawson has been a resource in the industry for decades in solving issues. And when he looked at GPAC and he talked with Roma on Motion Spell, a light bulb went on in his head, and it connected decades of experience. So Fred has that breadth of understanding and capability that organizations, individuals, and companies have recognized and have him discuss things. I've spent many projects with Fred around the world in trying to solve issues, and he's always the propeller head that goes out and kind of figures how it comes together, and then we just take it to market. So that's a little bit about Fred, but let's remember who he is. He's a really great baseball player and a phenomenally good musician. And oh, by the way, he writes exceptionally well.
Yeah, he writes exceptionally well. I have only good things to say to Fred. Actually, we decided to work with him at the beginning of the year, and I came to meet him at NAB when, you know, most of the writing was already done. And I think we didn't have the time to discuss something else than the paper, because he was such passionate about all of the things that came. I remember he came at some point, and he was talking about MPEG-5, and he had a question for me about the kind of transform that was used in the codec. And he came back to me the day after just to rediscuss about this, and he had so much more information. Just, you know, I was so surprised and so happy to have this kind of conversation with him. And just to make the white paper, we just got two long conversations that just, and he was able to come back with so much details and make sense of it. Exceptional.
It's well put together, and it's useful, right? Because the first part is all about the kind of functionality that GPAC has, but also it explains what things are. So there's a, you know, you get a feeling for what's meant in this context by packaging. And so for anybody who's not even on top of exactly what all of these functions are, it teaches as much as anything else. One thing I wanted to bring up is perhaps this pie chart about advanced thumbnail format usage rates. It sounds pretty exciting, but I think what it really, reason I bring this up is because We've got to remember, I'm sure many people who literally do this and create and support systems themselves understand how much processing goes into the workflow. But I think a lot of people who don't have hands-on experience kind of forget how much extra stuff needs to be done apart from, you know, getting a video, encoding it, and then sticking it out. You've got to have thumbnails, for instance. You've got to have all of the data that needs to come together. And, you know, and I think that when we trying to understand what the use cases are and why things are so complicated and therefore why can GPAC help simplify things, let's not forget that there's all sorts of stuff going on behind the scenes to look through, increasingly now with AI, we're also needing to look through and the media itself, as well as repurpose it for little proxies and get thumbnails and stuff like that. So is there, in terms of those extra features rather than simply packaging, you know, is there something you can say about, you know, the way that GPAC's used for these hidden uses?
Yeah, so what is great with open source, and when you have a community, when you are not like an, you know, industry only funded open source, you know, to support your group, with a real community, people contribute. So you see the problems, and in GPAC we are, so as I said, even on the pure open source side and on the research side, the man who created GPAC, who's now a researcher, having, you know, students and writing papers, is someone who made a startup in New York City. You mean, you know, someone from France taking a plane and decided to have his own chance in New York at the end of the 90s. So that's, you know, for me, exceptional individuals. I got really lucky to meet a lot of work, a lot of passion. And creating, to come back to the community, there are so many people willing to report the problems or share with us the kind of directions in which they would like to go. So when it comes to the industry, we are, you know, quite active. I, you know, go to conferences. We go to MPEG also, where a lot of companies come and say, hey, I would like to standardize the way thumbnails are handled because this is a pain at the moment. And then there are the users. The users said, hey, I have this video that's playing, I don't know, on this platform, but I don't like the platform. So I decided to make a new web page to, you know, read it because I don't like the way they present the stuff. I don't like their recommendations. And, you know, this hacker minds, companies, I think, have started to embrace this and see that they should rather hire these individuals who are, in my opinion, really creative, hardworking, and passionate, and who have a really good added value, and not considering them as, you know, hackers that would harm their business. And so when it comes to all these sides, GPAC is totally fully equipped. And one thing that I've tried to do, but I failed, and I know that prior to this conversation, Alan, you mentioned Movie Labs. The core, the technical core of GPAC is centered around the MPEG-4 set of technologies and the file format, ISO BMFF. And of course, we use it for distribution. But the full chain is production, distribution, and archives. And using it for archives makes sense. Like the MP4 file format is ubiquitous. It's ubiquitous for storing files. It's ubiquitous in distribution, but it's not ubiquitous in production because there are, you know, people producing stuff have other constraints. But the chance we have is Apple. Apple gave their QuickTime file format as a basis for ISO BMFF at MPEG. And they said, you know, this is going to be royalty free for everybody. So that was great, and I think a great reason why it's so ubiquitous today. But then there is this ProRes ecosystem that, you know, exists. And I'm trying to create something that says to people, and I'm not talking about the huge producers, but maybe to the people who operate at a lower scale, that it's possible to only have one workflow, store all the metadata in this ISO BMFF and, you know, ISO BMFF related file format, including ProRes, and just use this with one workflow to deal with everybody, everything. So the, you know, producing their content and packaging it with all the languages, all the metadata, and you know everything they need, all the thumbnails that they could pre-create, etc. Then package it for distribution, and then storing it for archiving and making sure that the archives stays readable over time because this is open source and based on open standards.
Let me, you know, whoever's watching this, you know, what Roma just said, you need to go back and record it. That is like an extremely articulate description of this process. But I'm going to just kind of compliment that in a sense of maybe you don't know what we're talking about, which is just common verbiage for us, which is MPEG. You know, MPEG is a standardization group from MPEG 1 from years ago when television first started and how you got it on your telly and whatever you're watching, up to MPEG 5. And MPEG 5 is all designed around video codecs and video capabilities. MPEG stands for Motion Pictures Expert Group. And trust me, they are experts in this environment and trying to solve this problem. But there's one thing in your question, Russell, that, you know, just want to reinforce. There's blood within these networks that have to take place to make them all work. And when you mess around with that blood, you destroy the efficiencies of the network, and that's called metadata. And you mentioned that before. And when the metadata is touched or messed up or stripped in many different types of efforts, it blows things apart. And so we run on the blood of metadata when it comes to how things are generated, created, packaged, verified, versionized, distributed, and pushed out into the market for all of us to watch very efficiently and easily right now. Everything that we're watching right now has metadata attached to it. So it's no small task, what Roma just explained. And that's why I said, go back and listen to it again, because you'll be schooled on what's happening. The fact of the Motion Pictures Group, which is a quagmire of political opinions and like, because it is just that, it's a standards organization. You know, and so there's a method to the madness, though. And we're at MPEG 5, and now it's starting to grow and prosper. Roma also mentioned something for those, you know, the different levels of understanding on all this discussion is something called Movie Labs. Movie Labs is been created as a research organization within the five, was six, now five, you know, studios and their technology needs. The studios have a tendency to move through CTOs and engineering groups like a river passing by a dock. But in this case, Movie Labs is a group of very accomplished individuals with great network contributors within the studios that provide this kind of information and insight. Movie Labs 2030's ontology document is, again, a tremendous complement to what Roman just said and to what we're talking about with MPEG 5. So there we have it. We have a few things. We have, you know, GPAC, we have Movie Labs 2030, and we have MPEG 5. That's the foundation of what we need to be able to understand to be able to advance this overall discussion of what we're drilling into with Roma. And it's really key because understanding the process and how things work, you got to understand the blood that makes it be efficient, and that's metadata.
Yeah, maybe just if I can add something. MPEG, beside being an expert, I think it's been a really incredibly successful group. Because when you're building such complex technology, and especially now we have more tooling to try to, you know, progress on dealing with the ever-increasing complexity. But back in the days, creating something at this level of technology, think about MPEG 4 part 10, AVC H.264, ubiquitous codec. There's no error in the codec. We've been using it. We've had the hardware acceleration. So it took some time because of the complexity at the time that seemed overwhelming. But if there were some errors in it, it wouldn't have been successful at this level. Yet I'm really, really impressed. And I think that GPAC also is part of it, because on the file system that is also, you know, hundreds of pages of specification, they sometimes I say that we are kind of advocate on this technology because we rely so much on it. And the fact that it's ubiquitous is, you know, using ISO, BMFF, CMAF, MPEG-4, MPEG-DASH. The fact that MPEG was so successful and that we could build this open source software that would help, you know, companies and these standards builders accelerate their deployment is probably part of the overall success of MPEG, because when you have early implementation, you detect the bugs early and then you can, you know, fix them before everything is released. And then it's part of the reason why GPAC is so successful and why we're ahead of time compared to some other projects which are just, you know, following up on the trends. But I just wanted to say that MPEG for me was phenomenally good, and I hope that groups can, you know, continue to be at this level. It's important for the industry.
That importance is needs to be reinforced, and I want to get Russell to financial reasons behind all of this and where it's going and what we're doing. But the underlying foundation of MPEG 5 is basically, you know, something that's called LCEVC. Now, there's another acronym for you, right? But the fact of it is that is the underlying foundation that makes it all work. And that comes from a company called VNova. And that fits in, and that's evolved from a revolutionary codec called Perseus that they had that fits into this overall need of GPAC. Now, the licensing models behind all of that are so inexpensive, it's astounding. And that's what the management of this kind of effort and afoot comes into play is costs. And costs, you know, need to come down and have come down considerably about, you know, what does it cost to put this code, this technology on televisions, on set-top boxes, in phones? All of that is a business model that trickles down to being able to connect the viewer, the user, the contributor, the whatever it might be. It's, you know, again, it's no small task. It's like you, someone captures something that's out in the market. It's a news event of some sort, you know, to push that content back up and take it and have it be on the news and then have that be formatted and be able to be put together that comes back out and proven that it's not fake, then pushed out to the viewer, is what we're talking about here on the efficiencies and the economic benefits of what this kind of technology understanding comes into play. This is a problem that is being experienced throughout the entertainment industry right at the moment with the studios, with the broadcasters. The sheer amount of content that has to go out to pacify viewers' wants and needs at any particular time, because we've gotten to a point of immediacy that we have to have whatever we want whenever we want to have it. Well, people get a little angered when things don't quite work right. And this is the background of how things work right, is what we're talking about today. So in there, what used to be a really bad word, say 5 years ago, 6 years ago, was blockchain. And blockchain efficiencies and the mathematical algorithms that are within this entire format is truly going to change the way we work. So you combine GPAC's capability, open source, within on top of blockchain, this is the direction that is starting to be taken to help save costs. Now, why is that important? Is that them being cheap? Well, yeah, they're being economically frugal because they're being charged an exorbitant amount of money from these things that you brought up before called cloud. You know, to get things up and get things down, come with a tariff, a toll. You know, and you need to be more efficient on how things are packaged to be able to get to it. This is this evolutionary change that we're getting to. This is where we've been before when we first created, how we went through and all the brilliance and the changes and the mindsets that went to make this work. This is where Roma started back 20 years ago, and that happened trying to figure this out. Now we're at a point that it's critical. And that is because the sheer enormity of the kinds of content that have to come out into the marketplace today to be viewed and pacify the viewer is that. The other side is understanding content from a personalization standpoint where AI comes into play that has to crank all of this. This is an enormous machine that has to work exceptionally well for just you and I right now, and all of you that are watching us are kind of maybe having your eyes roll back a little bit. The fact of it is, it has to be efficient. And that's the underpinnings of what we're talking about in this call.
Yeah, there's, yeah, sorry, Russell. That was an interesting part that I cannot, you know, I want to answer to some of this. I think I absolutely agree on the optimizing part. I think that we've built, you know, when you think about it, like every new generation of codec is like 30 to 50% more efficient than the previous one. And we have new generations every, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, let's say, because the pace has changed. But when you think about it, we needed these new codecs 20 years ago because the infrastructures also have evolved. So of course it creates a lot of new, you know, use cases, but eventually when we are thinking about the economical equation, if we are thinking about sustainability, it's all about optimization. And what I like with the blockchain idea is that you start to leverage, I think, two things. First, the untrusted computing nodes. You can rely on, you know, I'm a computer engineer, so probably it's not true, but my computer is not always fully used. There are companies who have, you know, farms of servers that seem to be outdated and they could reuse it. We're talking, you mentioned, Russell, that GPAC could run in Wasm, which is a kind of virtual machine that runs in your browser. So you can run GPAC processing from your browser. And there is a real problem of trust and authenticity, you know, in letting someone else deal with your own content. But we've invented this, you know, whole set of technology that just brings the trust back. And it allows us, instead of saying we're going to build, you know, farms to make some cloud computing, etc., blockchain and all the optimization that you can do with AI that comes from machine learning mostly, is super important. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are many companies in this space, LifePeer, Illuvio, Cortex, who's a customer of MotionSpell, trying to do this just-in-time stuff where you only produce what is needed at the place that is seems to be the best one. And thanks to AI, you know, everything comes together in a completely transparent way for the user. But it's more cost-efficient when you look at it.
Let's take that for just a second, because you used a word there that just kind of went into your conversation, and that's sustainability. And while sustainability is really important to everybody, you know, the environment, what it might be, where it really all translates down to is utility costs. You know, and if you can reduce the utility costs for the efficiencies of the technology that we're talking about right now, that's sustainability. And like what we're talking about with, when it comes to MPEG-5 and LVEC-VC, it's always a mouthful for me. It's, you know, your cost, your utility costs drop between 40% and 60%. Well, from a business standpoint, that's what you look at because that's cost savings. From an environmental standpoint, it's a tremendous, let's just say an average there of 50%. Big deal from a sustainability standpoint, which is what we need to look at as a society and cultures around the world, is how do we start managing this amazing amount of environmental usage that we have. So coming back to what through GPAC and what you just said, you know, having that understanding of how to build into that kind of sustainability and efficiencies and economic benefits that you have is really important. And, you know, please understand that I'm an advocate of what Roma is doing because of the efficiencies that I've seen come into play. And maybe now is a good time to kind of take a look at some of the case studies, Russell, that you were wanting to talk about, because then maybe at least one, and so we can drill into it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Cool. I just wanted to say, because on sustainability, that you talked about there is the environment, there is the economics, because most of the time when you are more efficient, it's also less costly. And I think there is a third pillar, which is the social part. When we're talking about MPEG or an open source software like GPAC, we're putting our minds together to build something. And when you think about it, I think a big challenge of the industry is the talent shortage. If we have more people, you know, working like together on a project, you don't need to have 10 competitors. You know, we can probably, especially on some, problems that have been, resolved for a long time or studied for a long time. Maybe that's an opportunity for us, this social, you know, stuff, putting ourselves together and accepting that some of the things are not a differentiator anymore. It's just something that is foundational to what we're doing, and that we should, you know, gather on this just to be even more efficient. So sorry, Russell, I interrupted you on this, we'll have the opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go down the stream too far on that, Russell, but what you're describing is unification of thought and, you know, everyone getting together, you know, competitive nature, human competitive nature is always defeating on what we're trying to accomplish here. But trying to get, and we're at a time now when there's a lot of discussion around unifying an effort to address certain issues. There's fake news, there's inefficient platforms, there's all kinds of things that the world is coming together to try to solve. And so the timing of what we're talking about here is paramount, and it's happening today.
What we've done so far is we've looked at the reasons, the motivations of using any solution, really, and also the kind of current state of play. And I think it's really, I'm pleased that you brought up MPEG 5. It's worth remembering that each MPEG number is a big suite of work, and it's a big set of tools, and it's not just a one specific video codec, and there's other details about metadata, as you say, which is a lifeblood. And I also really do want to emphasize what Roman mentioned about having this, at least this goal, this aspirational goal of having a workflow which is complete from the beginning to end, because technically it's possible. Practically, yeah, I know there are definitely challenges. And but on the other hand, we've talked about this previously on the program with Bruce Devlin, the importance of metadata shouldn't be understated. And it's also gets to the point about, well, what are we actually missing out on? Because we don't have as much metadata as we might otherwise, yet we're getting along fine. We think, oh, right, well, this is all well and good. But because we don't have such a comprehensive amount of metadata or tools to deal with metadata, I think there's possibly a lack of imagination based upon what we could be doing and could be achieving if only we'd actually we had that and we could rely on an end-to-end workflow and certainly an end-to-end metadata management. Now we can pivot to kind of looking at the reasons, financial reasons for using GPAC. And I thought an interesting one hit was this, which I bring up on the screen now, about advertising. Now, we know that advertising is critical. Clearly, it's where a lot of the money comes from. And I wasn't aware of research how much advertising is missed. Now, I know that there is missed advertising in terms of inventory and you have to kind of bid in real time effectively to work out which advert's going to go to which place in many streaming systems. And there's sometimes, you know, it just doesn't come up with an advert in time and then therefore it's missed. But this is actually getting at another problem, which is just functionally, sometimes it just doesn't work. And there's also another part of the white paper which talks about problems with streaming and buffering and things like that, which is really just a breakdown of what should be happening. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit to what is it that the GPAC can do to actually help make sure that this actually works as it's even supposed to.
Yeah, it's So advertising is typically, it's an area where GPAC does the job, and even more, I'm going to say more about this, but that's an area where I'm really not satisfied, because myself, I use an ad blocker. I don't like the ads as they are today. I would like to love them. You know, sometimes I received, you know, some emails I'm really happy about that are the great combination between teaching me something or that something exists. And I keep that in mind. But it's just at the moment, it's too much. Sometimes it's just too silly. It's not targeted enough. I have no interest in what I'm seeing. And so, like many people, I just decide to shut it down. So in my opinion, advertising is an area where there is so much room for innovation. And to come back to GPAC, in GPAC, I said, you can build some graphs of processing. And we have a module that's called the compositor. And the compositor is basically a compositing unit, processing unit, where you take the raw frames before encoding them or re-encoding them. And you can put some data in the picture. So that can be watermarking, that can be an advertisement, that can be a logo. You can do stuff, you can do them dynamically. And a lot of people have been combining this with just-in-time, which allows you, when you're doing OTT, basically the video is streams by chunks of a few seconds. And so when you insert the advertising, you have, let's say, 30 seconds of advertising, and then you know you're going to take, imagine that you have 10-second segments, you have three times 10-second segments that you're going to fill. And GPAC allows you to replace any of these segments, whether they are supposed to be advertising or not, which allows you to do tons of things. You can do watermarking just because you put a slightly different segments for one of the users or the other users. And if you grab, for example, the source of piracy, you can see that they receive the streams A and then the stream B. And with the pattern, you can re-identify the source and you can, you know, shut it down. And that's the same for advertising. We have users who have created something really smart. Instead of having this bidding platform where, you know, you're in a kind of hurry, like I have a man that is 50 year old living in California and you need to place this advertisement. They do things that are different and they say, okay, I accept the price of having to retranscode for some of the users at some of the moment in my stream that I control using this just-in-time stuff. So you're going to receive a segment that's going to be different from the others, but then they can propose for you something that is totally customized. It's totally customized in the video and you're receiving it. And in my opinion, we need to go, there are the things like SGAI, SSAI that are standardized by the industry, but it doesn't move forward fast enough. People are bored by advertising, even though the value is huge. We can see that from the subscription and the platforms, you know, pushing for ad-based tiers. Yes, Alan.
Oh, no, I'm just listening to what you're saying. I can jump into that. And what you're describing, from ad insertions of the capability of targeting an individual's for needs and interests, and that's all coming back from another database that's serving up kind of their interests and what they watch and what they do and kind of behavior. It, again, I've used this, and I apologize, I've used this a few times. It's no small task. When what you just described happens not in seconds, it happens in milliseconds. And the ability to have that kind of efficiencies has been a promise for a long time. And most all of us have had that in our neighborhoods with our televisions, zip coding what that information is. Now that we have the likelihood and capabilities of being able to serve up appropriately targeted messaging, shall we call it, is kind of sitting on the edge. Now, many in the ad tech world would say that we've been doing this for a long time. I mean, there's some phenomenally great engines out there, for example, with Imagine Communications ad tech platform for about 900 networks around the country, around the world. Serve this up, but they wouldn't exist with what we're talking about and the efficiencies of delivering that, because the sheer magnitude of volume of traffic commercials They're just sitting there in a repository that have to be tapped. They have to come and go to an individual. That efficiency is in milliseconds. And so that is why what we're discussing here is so critically important. And Roma, you're just starting to peel the onion back. And for those that have interest in doing this, there's much more discussion that we can have with you on many different levels, whether Roma or myself.
And I wanted to compliment it. So based on the way you answered to my question, it's basically when you're watching a show, it's entertainment, right? You want to go out of your life and project yourself into a different experience. And sometimes you see things, I don't know, sometimes when I listen to music or when I watch a movie, there are moments I would like to take them, to clip them and to play them back and back, you know, and just in this mood and I'm into this moment, I would like to play it. Or I see an object in a movie and I would like to identify what it is. You see the missed opportunities, you could sell these objects, you could sell these experiences to people. And actually now we have Google Lens, which is based on AI. You take a picture and it tells you, I had a problem with my fridge. It couldn't recognize the number because the stickers was unreadable. I just took the picture. It gave me the exact model, you know? The added value for these things and regarding advertising for me is huge. Nobody except Google at the moment, probably other AIs companies, nobody's trying to leverage this. You're setting some dreams to people. You know, let them dream until the end. If they want to be the people they see or the things that they want, if they want to re-experience the stuff. The thing I'm talking about, the music, we ended up in GPAC adding a feature. It's not a good music player, to be honest. But we added up. At a moment, you're listening to music and you can put these markers where you can play this moment in the music that you like the most, you know? Now it's easy. We have all these interactive, you know, how do you say, clickable screens, you know, where you can choose and you can go back and you can do your stuff. But back in the days, it was not possible. You were listening to the whole record. And I just wanted to have this emotion or put myself into this state of mind. That's so important. That's what people, you know, why people watch content.
And it's something that we've been trying as a society to do for a long time. We, you know, back in the 80s, we had something called the red button on Sky's, you know, remote control that would automatically put an ad in. And that ad would then be based on what your viewing is. And that is 40 years ago, you know. And then you move into the 90s with interactive television, and there's advocacy out of France, out of Paris, that was far ahead of everybody else. With Canal Plus's kind of capabilities of putting together this kind of interactive communication that came back to advertising, you know. And so we as a community of people, we have been, you know, discovering this kind of capability many times. And there's a lot of wish lists and a lot of dreams that have been not just what we capture independently from little snippets of music and video clips that we have, but for us as media people, trying to serve this up has been tried. Now we're at a point technically that we can do it, and I believe that's what's important about this discussion, is we can do it today. And that's what Roma's group, as well as GPAC, which this is amazing, really, has been thought through for 20 years, that has been trying to figure this out with a group of highly accomplished engineers. And accomplishments are also defeats and failures. You don't have success without failures. And so that is what the capture, what the gain is at this moment, that we are able to get this kind of thinking to the ones that have the need and interest.
Yeah. What is it? I absolutely agree with you. I think we are a kind of crucial moment in these media times where media is omnipresent. It's omniscient. It's everywhere. I don't know how many hours per day you're watching at the screen, but that's probably huge. So you're exposed to this. And again, for me, the personalization is not what we used to do with the advertising to stay on this. JPEG can do this. But in my opinion, JPEG gives you the tools to go, you know, so much further, because with these workflows and the modules that you can connect together, you can create something that is so much more. Let's take another example. It's I'm just thinking through. Imagine I like your shirts, and I would like to know, yours. And I would like to know if it would fit on me, right? The AI could recognize which shirt it is. I could take a picture of myself. It could say it fits, it doesn't fit. Here is the price. Here are the similar articles. And I think it's not all about consumptions, but when we're talking about the added value and the, you know, business impact, of course, we're talking about money and we're trying to get the money from the users. But it's also an optimization where the end users is supposedly, you know, free for his own purchase or her own purchases. And for me, we can improve that a lot. So there is the cost efficiency at one side that we've discussed. There is this kind of customization and innovation, and advertising is typically an area where, you know, I see some improvement. And for me, that's business impact in the real world. We're headed toward this. And maybe on a question that Russell had last time, because we had questions about Netflix. I think one of the reasons, you know, I said Netflix chose us probably because of the flexibility. And so, yeah, the numbers of innovations that they are, you know, successfully articulating in their strategy. When we started to work with them, I had no ideas that they were going to have an ad tier, an ad-based tier, that they were going to go into this advertisement system, that they were going to do interactive shows, that they were going live. I didn't know about this, but, you know, probably it was in their vision that they could have the cost efficiency, the customization, the innovation part of JPEG. And of course, there are big sponsors. This, when things are not available, which happens from time to time, Netflix sponsors JPEG, which is great.
Well, they do a little bit more than that. In addition, you know, Netflix, like anything else, is a, you know, an engagement model with video and films. And to be able to bring out what they've been working on with their ad platform is another form of unique viewing. It can't be like everybody else. They need to have something that's just as informative and engaging as what the individual is viewing. And so being able to use, you know, GPAC with you, Roman, with MotionSpell, is, you know, a credential that, you know, we should really advocate on the market, because it's a risk for them to take this. Yeah, they kind of buy into the overall phenomenon, the mania that fast is out in the marketplace, but they're serving it up in a new format that is going to change the way others do it as well. And so that comes back to the business model and the engagement and the capabilities that we have been talking through this whole conversation about over a period of time to be able to have it. Like you said, that you wanted to take a look at the shirt and you like it. Thank you. Is the ability, you know, to do that? Well, you can. I do that. I mean, I do look at shirts online, and, you know, I've been skinned as an avatar, put it up there, spin it around, and take a look at how things work. I used to be known, for those that are aged like myself, known as the Jennifer Aniston moment, right? Back, it's like, what does Jennifer Aniston's sweater look like? That was a dream. That was a hope back 30 years ago, not 20 years ago. And now we're able to do that, and that is the fastest growing area for retail online purchasing right at the moment, because research shows that a person needs to see themselves in the article in the moment with that product, whatever that might be, in order for them to make a decision. We've been held off of that for a long time. But back in the day, on a strategist with Lexus cars, that's what we unfolded is the difference that the person needed to see themselves in the car versus, you know, anything else. And that's why there was such a success between Lexus and Infiniti. Infiniti had rocks and trees and ice, and Lexus showed the car. Nothing new. And that is what we have today. When you see yourself in the product, when you're able to engage what you possibly could be perceived, you like it. And then you make the choice of whether or not to purchase it. That's what the capability of where we're at today and the understanding of this kind of engagement. It happens every day and it's getting better.
Given Netflix originals, I mean, they should be in the best position to create that end-to-end workflow. And it certainly seems a shame to me, from a sustainability point of view, to get AI to work out which fridge somebody had in the kitchen when you already knew which fridge it was because somebody bought it and put it in the set. And so, like, that data is already there. And if that were brought through and then repurposed, then that would be cool. And then we can use AI for, you know, to add information on top of that. But I just wanted to touch on Netflix itself. It's one of, you know, it's obviously the one of the flagship case studies in the white paper. But it's also very broad. I think we've got a sense of that already. I just wanted perhaps just to start right at the beginning and just say, you know, what is it that Netflix did, and effectively they started using GPAC, but it'd be great if you could just kind of give a very brief intro into what they did to start with, because I know you, at the time you announced that they started using you, which of course now, as we've just said, has helped them launch and do things, you know, change their proposition several times over. But What was the kernel of their initial kind of pain point that they found GPAC sorted out?
I think the ignition was that they couldn't find any packager that would follow the pace of their innovation, basically, and it cost them so much money. Like, they had an engineer, you know, they were reliant on only one person that had developed this inner piece of technology. And at some point, this person who had, you know, raised up into the company said, you know what, I'm using every day this open source, you know, project, and especially GPAC. And I don't have the details. Probably they made an internal evaluation of the different solutions. The thing is, What was really good for us is that Netflix accepted to make this press release. I think it doesn't happen, you know, they don't have any interest in this. It was really nice of them. They're doing so many things when it comes to standards. And I'm talking only from my perspective because they are doing so much more. And Alan gave some examples. But when it comes to standards and open source, they are really acting as a leader. When it comes to accessibility also, which is a subject I'm interested in, they really act as a leader. And so they have their own reasons. And as I said, sometimes I discover afterward, because, you know, technically we're discussing about challenges. They ask if we can do something. They ask us if we can code something to make some test, and we do some benchmarks together. But it's like, you know, what is the ignition point? I just learned afterward that they had their own packager, and it was, you know, it had become, I would say, business risk somehow to, you know, keep on operating the way they were. What is funny is that before that, so it projected us, you know, in front of everybody. It's like, whoa, what is this open source project and this commercial company that comes with it that just, you know, now supports the overall packaging of Netflix, because that's the distribution of the movies, but that's also for the journalist preview, and that's also on some of the ProRes production side, and that's, you know, they're using it everywhere now. So people were really surprised. And what surprised me at the time is that before that I was struggling in commercial, you know, pitches and calls, because people told me, yeah, can you give me a bigger, you know, example of a deployment that you made? And as an open source project, it's so hard to get a press release. And after Netflix, people told me, oh yeah, but it's Netflix, they can do whatever they want, they have unlimited resources, find me something else. That was so funny. Ooh. For me. It's like that's the best reference that I can honestly have.
Yeah, that boy, that's a person with a big ego, you know, to say that. The sheer depth, that's no small decision that's being made internally in the engineering group to be able to say that out in the market. They don't say it, you know, because they're, let's face it, they're back to dreams. That's everybody's dream, is to be Netflix right now, you know, and the reach what's going on. So with their acknowledgement, that's fantastic. It's the other person, tell me something else. It's like, wow, okay, what do you want? So, wow, that's an amazing comment.
It's really good. You know, I think it's great when you've got a big name that's using your product, and also that you can like clearly talk about. We've delved into all sorts of stuff around GPAC, and I really enjoyed it. What I want to do is just highlight this Instagram use case before we finish off, because I think, I mean, if you're looking for a big number to think about, this one seems really big to me. Cutting the cost of using servers to encode all of the video uploaded by end users by 94%. I mean, that's, if you're looking for a percentage for cuts, that's a good one to get. Mm-hmm. Can you give a bit of insight into, you know, how that came about and what is it about GPAC that solved that problem?
Yeah, so first I want to say that I learned at NAB, I got the chance to have lengthy discussions with people from Meta, so the group that owns and operates Instagram. And they told us that I think that's the biggest video platforms on Earth. They said that they operated, I don't remember, it's like 10 or 20 more videos than YouTube. It's like you're on their platforms, you click on a button, then you have videos. You go on Facebook, you have videos. Instagram is only about video. And then the core problem is who's watching these videos? You know, there are many videos that are just made to be circulated in for your own circle, or you have, you know, 20 followers, your friends and family. And the thing is, prior to this optimization, a popular or non-popular video would basically, it's not exactly true, but it would basically go through the same workflow. And eventually they said, well, this is a big problem because the pace at which, you know, the video ingest grows is faster than our capability to build facilities to encode the videos. They already had farms to encode the videos. And so the decision was to say, do we really need to re-encode the videos the way we do for the popular videos? And so make a distinctions. And for that, they found that GPAC's MP4 box, the command line packager, was perfect. And so they used it. They had this 94% cut, which is super impressive. And what was nice, again, is that the engineer took the time to write a blog post and explain, you know, what they do and which tools they used. So that's a phenomenal publicity for us. Like, it's like people say that, you know, what is this? But again, I'm going to say it. I think most of the engineers in our industry knows about this tool. And my problem is to make sure that it infuses into, you know, either these engineers going into top management level, which is a super long, you know, funnel. Maybe it's not really a good business for me, or making sure, as we are doing right now, that these successes, you know, either small or big successes, find their way until the decision makers hears.
It's one of the good things about the streaming community is that there are a lot of companies that are willing to share what they've done. And I think that's my personal opinion, is that's less true on the more broadcast side of things. I think it comes from kind of how the internet even started, you know, post military, where everybody's kind of trying to make stuff work. And, you know, web rings of websites and putting your own web pages up. You know, that seems to have infused itself into to the streaming community. And now people are saying, right, well, here's my blog post. This is what we did. And even what didn't work. And so I think it's brilliant that the white paper goes into that level of detail. So I'm just going to put on the screen again the URL to go and get the white paper. Very clear. There's a whole load of stuff that all three of us want to talk about. I think the breadth and depth of GPAC kind of allows us to talk pretty much about any part of the industry when it comes to streaming and distribution and increasingly production, which is cool. But we do have to bring it to a close. And I wanted to say out of thanks to both Alan and Romain. If you could pop a like on the video, subscribe if you're not already subscribed. That would be the best way to thank them for their time, because it has been genuinely a pleasure. And thank you very much both for joining me.
Thanks, Russell. Thanks, Alan. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. It was mine.
To be continued, I would say.
Even. Look forward to that. And Russell, thank you for inviting me. Beautiful day. Have a great
time. To be continued. Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.